Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast for Friday, August 30th. I'm your host, Philip Heilman, the new Alligator Sports Editor for the fall semester. We're just really excited to be here. This is our first podcast of the fall. We had a pretty busy summer. I got Joe with me, Joe Morgan, our former Alligator Sports Editor. We've got Adam Lichtenstein, who is now the Alligator Sports Assistant to the Editor. Landon Watnick, the Online Sports Editor. And Adam Pincus, one of our football writers. Joe just got back from Miami covering, you know, Jose Fernandez, the Cuban defector. Adam and Landon have been here all summer just slaving away at the Alligator, breaking stories and writing about Aaron Hernandez and Riley Cooper. Just a good summer from you guys. And Pincus, tell me about Fish and Stream.
Yeah, I worked at Field and Stream magazine in New York. It was a
experience. That's enough, Pincus.
Come on.
Let's just go ahead and jump right into it. Fall camp is wrapping up. The Gators kick off the season tomorrow at 12:21 against the Toledo Rockets. Let's just each go through and maybe talk about one takeaway that we each had from fall camp and what we saw from him.
I'm excited to see Dante Fowler. He showed flashes of brilliance last year, and I really think I really think that Dante Fowler is going to have a big breakout season for the Gators on defense.
My biggest question is, what do you think about his nickname with John Bullard, the Bash Bros?
I think that's pretty cool. I'd like to see a little personality out of those two on the field this year. I don't know how Muschamp's going to, you know, he might put the clamp down on that, but
they need to do like a kid and play sack dance.
my question is, wasn't that Mark McGwire and Jose Canseco's nickname?
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's hope in like 15 years that Fowler and Bullard aren't hit for steroids.
And there's that that film thing. I won't go into that.
All right. Anyhow. Adam.
You know what I'm talking about?
Nobody ever has any idea what you're talking about, Adam.
You talking about Bad Boys?
No. Bang Bros or something with their traveling bus.
Well, this
Pinkus, you're the only one who watches those channels, okay?
This podcast, I think we can have a name for this edition of the podcast now. Let's keep going.
This podcast just took a really dark turn early, but thank you for that. Adam Lichtenstein, we've got two Adams on the show. Lichtenstein, who we also call Steve. So if at any point in this podcast you hear Steve, just roll with it. We're talking about Adam Lichtenstein. What did you take away from fall camp?
One of the big things I took away was Kelvin Taylor and Adam Lane's just tumble down the depth chart. It seemed like Kelvin Taylor was almost appointed as Matt Jones, like his backup, as soon as he got to camp. But as fall camp progressed, it's kind of fell down. Like, you know, Mark Herndon, former walk-on, moved up to the backup spot with Matt Jones being out. Mac Brown, obviously the starter. And Valdez Showers, a former defensive back, is now at number three. It seems like Kelvin Taylor, Adam Lane, they just really haven't picked up the slack where the coaching staff has wanted them to. So I think it's going to be interesting what we see from them, if we see them at all during the season.
Kind of a weird summer, in case anybody missed it. Matt Jones diagnosed with a serious viral infection back in July. He wasn't with the team for the start of fall camp, and almost all throughout fall camp, he had blood work done multiple times, and they finally ruled him out for Toledo last week. He's expected to come back against Miami, but for week one, the Gators will be piecing some things together. Steve, how much do you think it's a put on by Muschamp about these young guys, and he's trying to, you know, kind of make them work and earn what they are going to get? And how much do you really think they like Valdez Showers and Mark Herndon?
I think it's a mix. Obviously, I mean, I can't speak for their personality because I haven't talked to Kelvin Taylor or Adam Lane. It might just be something to get them motivated, or they might have just not be performing in camp. I saw Kelvin Taylor and Adam Lane at one of the open practices. They were doing a ball security and blocking drills right in front of me. And they both seem, Adam Lane seemed to like kind of juggle the ball a little bit. Kelvin Taylor and Adam Lane both seem to have a little trouble like picking up blocks. So I think it might be kind of a mixture of both the coaching staff trying to motivate them and actually them needing to get better.
Yeah, I think it was about 10 days, maybe 2 weeks ago at this point. Muschamp was asked the very question, what are the young guys not doing that's making them fall down the depth chart? And the number one thing that he pointed to was ball security and also the fact that playing running back at the college level is so much more than actually running the ball. When these guys were in high school, they're so athletically gifted. They can run past everybody. They can run over everybody. They don't have to develop those other aspects of their game. But in the college level, you have to do that. You have to protect the quarterback and pass protection. You have to be able to catch the ball out of the backfield. That's a huge part of the Gators' offense, or at least it was last year when Driscoll very rarely threw the ball deep. Do you think that's something that those guys can progress into, or kind of what's your stance on that?
I think they both can get better at it. Whether they will or whether they won't, it's something they're going to have to see during the season. One or both of them might get redshirted. We'll just have to see how the season progresses.
I'll be very interested to see what exactly Valdez Showers does. The coaching staff has talked a lot about this guy, but until you actually do it on the field, it's kind of a question mark. They've talked about using him as Omarius Hines was last year at times, kind of a swing back, scat back, doing a bunch of different things. So that'll be very interesting. And like you said, it seems like one of those young guys is going to get redshirted, if not both of them. So I guess we'll kind of see. Landon, what did you take away from fall camp?
Just the tight end depth chart. Not having Jordan Reed is going to be a huge absence for the Gators. They're going to miss a vertical threat at that position, but they might get a little better as run blocking at that position. Now the top two tight ends on the depth chart are Clay Burton and Tevin Westbrook, two converted defensive ends. And it's kind of interesting. Colin Thompson and Kent Taylor are two very highly touted tight ends that are coming out of high school. Have dropped to 3 and 4 on the depth chart, so they're obviously disappointing during practice.
Yeah, going into the summer, I kind of did my own little depth chart projections, and I really expected Colin Thompson and Kent Taylor to be atop the tight end depth chart. I mean, Clay Burton and Tevin Westbrook, like you said, two guys that have just switched positions pretty recently from the defensive side of the ball, whereas Thompson and Kent Taylor were pretty highly recruited, seemed like those were some pretty flashy guys that could have made some plays. Obviously, Thompson dealt with a foot injury last year, and we don't know if he's 100% back by now, but I guess we'll kind of just see how that shakes up. Pincus, what about you?
Well, if you think back to a year ago for the Bowling Green game, Florida didn't have a starting quarterback. And Will Muschamp got a lot of flack for having Driscoll at wide receiver and Jacoby Brissett, who's now at NC State, taking the opening snap. And, everybody was like, why are you being so cute? Why are you trying to outsmart yourself? Now there's no question who the starter is. It's Jeff Driscoll. And Florida, like it or not, they're going to live and die by what he can do, with his arm, because you don't have the workhorse in Mike Gillisley anymore. We're expecting a little bit of a drop off in the running game. And, this is Driscoll's team, and where Florida goes will, be largely on his improvement from year one to year two as a starter.
In case you guys missed it, the Alligator Sports kickoff wrap was on that very topic about Jeff Driscoll now being the unquestioned leader of the team. Make sure to check that out if you get a chance. What do you think are realistic expectations for Driscoll at this point?
I think what he had trouble with last season was just those, he didn't make a lot of mistakes, but it was just the intermediate throws, It's like, you have a wide open slant that could go for 25 yards, but it's thrown behind the receiver, and he drops it, and there's a missed opportunity. And that's also, it's on the receivers, but it's also on Driscoll too. If they're not really getting those big plays,
right?
And with DeMarcus Robinson and Ahmad Fullwood and Quinton Dunbar is another year older, the receivers should be a little bit better. And it's up to Driscoll to really put them into positions to really make big plays.
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting because a lot has been made about Driscoll and the offense as a whole going into the second season under offensive coordinator Brent Pease. But if you look at what Driscoll lost, from an outsider's perspective, it might not be that much, but Jordan Reed was really that guy's security blanket the entire season. When I think of one throw that Driscoll made last year, it was the touchdown pass against Tennessee to Jordan Reed where he threw across his body, and Jordan Reed did a little toe tap against the end zone. It seemed like they really kind of sparked the offense against Tennessee, and they went on to win. And also a guy that kind of goes overlooked is Frankie Hammond. I mean, that guy never really lived up to his potential, but he always had the ability to catch a, like you said, like a 7 to 8 yard slant and take it to the house, and that's what won them the Bowling Green game last year. Those two guys are gone. There's a lot of new freshman kind of toys that are going to be here, but we'll see kind of what happens.
And I fully think Driscoll's going to do that, and he's really primed for a huge season.
And even, too, like I was saying before, just no Jordan Reed, could Clay Burton and Tevin Westbrook really be those guys to catch a 10 to 20-yard pass down the middle? So.
But on that point, the reason why Jordan Reed was that guy and the reason why Jeff Demps and Chris Rain were so involved in the passing game the year before is because they didn't have the wide receivers to really take those catches.
Mm-hmm.
And now it seems like they do. So maybe that negates kind of the Jordan Reed absence a little bit.
One thing that I really took away, switching points per minute was just how unblockable Ronald Powell looked during fall camp. We only had two or three open practices, but it just seemed like every time the Gators were running drills when it was offense versus defense, that guy was in the backfield just wreaking havoc on the offensive line, whether it was Trenton Brown making him look silly, DJ Humphreys just kind of overpowering him. It just seemed like Ronald Powell was a force to be reckoned with. Ronald Powell missed the entire 2012 season. He first suffered an ACL tear in the Orange and Blue game and then had a setback. Originally, he was expected back for the LSU game last year. The setback put him out for the year. That's a guy, he came in as a number one overall recruit in 2010. Is that right?
That's right.
Number one overall recruit. So this guy's got the pedigree. And when he's been on the field, he's had production. I mean, he led the Gators in sacks in 2011.
That was a sophomore, too.
As a sophomore, yeah. I mean, it was only, I think, six sacks.
He looks the part.
Yeah.
He looks like straight from the Terminator movies.
It really does. And
I'll be back.
And kind of just, the Gators lose seven guys on defense, and I think Ronald Powell's addition is going to be huge.
Yeah, especially you think about, you know, in this league with, you know, Aaron Murray of Georgia, and you got, you know, guys, you know, A.J. McCarron of Florida, you know, gets that far.
That's Alabama.
To the SEC championship, and then you have, you know, Winston on, you know, Florida State. A lot of good quarterbacks that Florida's playing this season. They're going to have, you know, dominating pass rush. And you lose somebody like Sharif Floyd, who really could, you know, create havoc in the backfield. Powell's really going to have to step it up. And, you know, potentially him and Dante Fowler on the edges, that's pretty scary.
Another thing to consider is that this ACL injury really seems to have humbled Powell a lot. And I know his freshman year he was a little bit of a head case. But now that he's had a year to kind of just sit back and maybe learn some of the scheme a little bit, maybe just have that, you know, have that taken away from him. He sounded really appreciative of the another opportunity just to run out in the field when he came to speak with the media Monday. So who knows? Maybe this is a breakout year for him. He certainly has the talent for it.
It's weird. It's weird to think how, you know, Easley and Powell and Sharif Floyd that kind of came in and anointed themselves like the big three, kind of like the Miami Heat, and you know, all the seniors like Mike Pouncey was like, told them, you know, you guys need to just shut up and play. And they had some trouble with, you know, Coach Meyer. And it's really interesting to see how these guys have matured. Floyd's obviously with the Vikings now in the NFL. But, you know, these guys are now the leaders of the defense. And it's going to be an interesting season for them.
And I wonder how much of that is Muschamp's influence, you know, because Urban Meyer didn't really run that tight of a ship around here from the stuff and details that, you know, keep coming out. So you have to think that Muschamp being a defensive-minded coach as well as, you know, maybe a bit more of a disciplinarian really shaping those three into what, you know, they are today.
Yeah, I want to get into Muschamp a little bit later and what you guys kind of have seen from him as he's progressed as a coach into year three. But first I want to tackle a couple of other head cases on the team, and one is Antonio Morrison. For anybody that missed it, Morrison had kind of an impromptu session with the media this week, and I guess you could say he apologized for his actions. In case you missed it, he had two off-season arrests. If anybody wants to detail our listeners in on what those were in 10 seconds or less.
He punched a bouncer and barked at a dog.
Okay, so
the second one, you give him a little bit of
the second one, the charges
that
were dropped, and I made an ass of myself with a column in our paper. And
I think everybody was very quick to judge, you know, fair or not, but it turned out to not be as much of a story as it was.
Right, okay, so the second offense, the arrest, it got dropped. So say what you will about that, but what did you guys think about his apology? To me, it seems like the idea behind it was good. I think maybe whoever set that up, he claimed that it was his idea and the coaching staff didn't make him come and talk to the media, that he wanted to get all this out of the way and he wouldn't be answering any more off-the-field questions the rest of the season, especially not during the Kentucky week, which I thought was kind of a weird addition to that. But what did you guys think about just what he said and his body language? Because I think all of you guys were there.
Yeah. You know, I guess I'll go first. I wrote, you know, column today about that. You know, if you think about it, I mean, let's say this happened to you and you walked into a room with, you know, 25 reporters with, you know, recorders on the table, and, you know, they're all basically, it wasn't like an interrogation, but he kind of took it the wrong way. And he kind of felt cornered, really. That's what it seemed like. And he, you know, with each question, he kept trying to kind of dig himself out of that, but it just kept talking, you know, in circles, and it just was like a It's like a train that just wouldn't stop. And just,
I like to give people the benefit of the doubt. Yeah. And I think that, like I said a few minutes ago, that he did have good intentions. Yeah. But like you said, he just couldn't stop digging himself deeper in a hole. Yeah. He had several opportunities to just be very contrite and apologetic for his actions. I think he was asked if he thought he deserved the suspension. And I think a really good answer to that would have been, yeah, I fully deserve the suspension, even the 2-game suspension for my actions. They were reckless, they were uncalled for, and they were a distraction to the team. But instead, I think it said, man, I don't want to talk about that, and just seemed really defiant. Someone asked him, could you just talk about the events that led up to the arrest? And that would have been a great opportunity for him to kind of explain what he was thinking or not thinking and kind of how he's grown from that thought process. And again, he just didn't want to talk about it. It seems to me weird. It's weird that if a guy wants to come and apologize, but then he's not going to touch on so many subjects that pertain to the issue. Yeah. It just kind of comes off as fake and kind of forced.
Yeah.
I think, if he did, as he said, if it was his idea, come out and talk to the media and try to at least try make an attempt to apologize for what he did, I think that's right there is a step. That's very immature from what we saw over the summer, at least, where he said, I want to, you know, come out and talk about this. Even if he didn't actually do it, it's one thing to say it in the tunnel leading out to media, and it's another thing to actually do it when you got cameras in your face.
Yeah, and, you know, last thing on that, I mean, you know, I wrote in the column that, you know, you got to give him credit for at least trying to apologize. And then the most striking thing from the media session to me was when he said, you know, if I'm not playing football, you know, what else am I going to do? It was kind of to that extent. Mm-hmm. And you know what? This kid really just wants to play football again. And, you know, he can't, you know, slip up again because, you know, that opportunity may be taken away from him. So, you know, I fully expect him to get it back on, you know, the right track. And really, you know, the best apology in sports is, you know, excelling on the field. I mean, let's be real. And
yeah.
If he has a great season. A great season, you know, this year, people are probably going to forget about it. You know?
And I think that one thing we don't consider is that he's, you know, he's 19 years old.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. you know, Muschamp doesn't have freshman talks in the media. So that was really his, I mean, was he at Media Day? I wasn't there. He's been with the media, and there were no other players to share the intention with. It was just him, and it was about his off-the-field issues. You know, I respect him for going in there. Like, I was in class during it, so unfortunately I just saw the Twitter stuff and watched the video. But he's 19 years old, and, you know, we don't know what his background is growing up, really, much other than he's from Illinois, you know. And, you know, I just give him credit for going out there. And, you know, he's 19 years old, and I think that if I had screwed up at 19, I wouldn't want 25 people I don't even know asking me about it. So,
right. Yeah, tough situation. Landon, wrap this up.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I was just about to say that, too. 19-year-olds, you know, say crazy things a lot of times, but I just felt like a lot of reporters asked very fair questions, and he was just being nasty out of nowhere. That was basically my main gripe with it, but I do agree that it did take a lot of, you know, just moxie to go out and kind of report on the whole thing.
Well, I'm sure if you were being asked by a bunch of strangers about probably the two most embarrassing moments of your life, you might be a little upset as well. I'm upset too.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I think that's probably about all you can say that. It was a good effort, and then people are going to... Well, it was a fair effort, I'll say, and people will be on either side of it. Kind of another head case, quote-unquote, that I want to talk about is Dominic Easley, who's been making kind of some really bold statements here of late, talking about he wants to be remembered as a Gator great. Easley came in, like you guys said before, with Floyd and with Palace, this big three. And last year, he had the team lead, I believe, with 4 sacks on the season, which is, you know, kind of mediocre, but he did seem like he made plays on the field, and the coaches in the SEC expect more of him. They voted him first team All-SEC in the preseason, so they're expecting big things from him. What are you guys expecting from him, the new leader of the defense, as Pincus wrote?
Yeah, and, you know, that was another story that I wrote for today. It was really how Easley, a little bit, if you think about it, kind of got a little overshadowed by Sharif Floyd last year.
Yeah.
But he's been very solid last year, like 8.5 tackles for a loss, and the year before, 7.5. Those are two pretty good numbers,
right,
really,
yeah.
if you think about it. And, you know, Easley's most, I think, or best quality, excuse me, is really his versatility.
Yeah.
He's moving, you know, inside and outside, depending on where, you know, Sharif was playing. Now he's moving back inside with Omar Hunter and Floyd being gone. You know, easily, he's the, you know, this outspoken guy and this, you know, somebody who's always going to make some noise, but really he kind of lets his play speak for itself in many cases.
Yeah, he's a guy who seems motivated, and you know, obviously we talked about his versatility inside and outside. I really think that that combination of motivation and the experience and the talent he does have, he was a high-profile recruit coming into Florida, will turn into a very good season for him on what's going to be a pretty underrated defense, I feel like, losing all those starters.
And I'll tell you what, there isn't a more colorful guy that you'll ever meet. This is a guy that's brought a huge barrel of animal crackers to post-game.
Yeah.
He walks around with a Chucky doll. He's had a tractor trailer train. He's posted Instagram photos of himself and his son naked.
Yeah.
He's had a picture with him and Sharif Floyd and his son. There's just stuff everywhere coming from this guy. That's just, you know, he's a lot of fun. And it seems like, to me, that his teammates really enjoy him.
Yeah.
When you ask his teammates, you know, kind of about the Chucky doll, even Jeff Driscoll got a good laugh out of it. He says, I don't ever want to touch that thing. He just gets mad. But it seems kind of like a running joke. And a football season is a grind. You know, it's especially in the SEC, you're facing some really good opponents. You're getting beat up throughout the year. And I think kind of that comic relief will be really refreshing for the team. And that's kind of what he wants to bring this year.
Yeah. I mean, you see, you know, Muschamp and that coaching staff get on these players. You got to, I mean, somebody's got to, you know, break the ice in that room a little bit, you know.
Right.
I mean, I never played football, but when I was playing baseball, I mean, you know, I had coaches that would get on me all the time, and it was always nice to have that one guy who kind of can
just,
you know,
ease the
tension a little bit. And, you know, SEC football's tough, and you got to have a guy like Easley on your team.
I think it's not just good for the team, it's good for the fans. The fans love watching him. He's a fun player to watch on the field, whether he's, you know, making a sack or tackle behind the line, or he's standing on the line dancing. People love pointing and watching him on the field. They love watching him dance. They like all the antics. So it's just good for the team.
I agree. And kind of going back to Muschamp, let's transition into him. Muschamp's entering his third season as coach of the Gators. He went 7-5 his first year here, 11-2 last year. What do you guys expect from him in year three, and how have you guys seen him progress as a coach from year one to now year three?
Well, I will say about Muschamp that I think he is a great guy in charge here, and I really think Florida, you know, did well to snatch him away from Texas. One thing I've seen from him is that he's really starting to establish his identity on this team. I wrote a feature about this last year prior to the Georgia game, how, you know, he's really just having tough defense, establishing the run. He's, you know, got Brett Pease bought into it as offensive coordinator. I thought it was really good that he brought along DJ Durkin as defensive coordinator, someone who's been in the system, who has, you know, the philosophy down pat, just really this, we're going to grind it out and we're going to do things the right way. And I really do think that the Muschamp way will be good for Florida in the long run. That sounded kind of corny when it came out, but, you know, what the hell.
Go ahead. No, I was, you know, Muschamp, it really seems like this team is turning to like an Alabama, so to speak. With you know, ball control, you got a quarterback who doesn't make mistakes. And Florida, you know, is a long way away from that. But you got a very polarizing coach in Muschamp, great coaches around him, and like his talent that's slowly, you know, getting into their own. And, you know, Driscoll, if he can protect the football and kind of control the game and make the passes he needs to make, he's gonna make, you know, Muschamp's, you know, philosophy look, you know, a hell of a lot better.
I remember back when Will Muschamp, like, became the head coach at UF, I had a friend who was, I believe at the time, covering the Texas A&M football team for their student paper when they were in the Big 12, and he said, you guys are really lucky to get Muschamp. He's a great coach. And I think he's at least partially proven that. He didn't have the greatest first year, but last year, obviously, fantastic season, 11-2. Sugar Bowl appearance, even if it wasn't the best result. I think that he's setting himself up to be a long-term coach at Florida. He's not going to be an Urban Meyer, you know, 6 years and out. He's setting himself up to be maybe, I don't want to say the next Steve Spurrier, but he's going to be the next Florida head ball coach.
Yeah. And the biggest thing that I noticed from him last season is he started having a little bit more fun. And I don't know if that's from, you know, winning more ball games.
Yeah, winning games definitely helps.
Yeah, but he was a lot more enjoyable to be around and cover on a day-to-day basis. And so I appreciated that.
And kind of like I said about Easley, same thing goes for Muschamp. Every Florida fan you talk to adores him. Even if they aren't a gigantic fan of his actual coaching X's and O's. They just love him, his personality. They love seeing him just go off on refs. I've seen that gif of him like just like frowning at Clay Burton, probably a 50
times. Frothy, Skeletor.
Yeah, yeah. Just, I've seen that so many times. They adore him.
Yeah,
more than I think they ever did for Meyer.
Muschamp's really done a good job between his speaking tours throughout the state during the offseason and just during press conferences and really endearing himself to the Florida fan base. This is a group that you had Steve Spurrier here and you had Urban Meyer here who were running gun offenses, you know, scoring 40, 50 points a game. And that's not what Muschamp wants to do. And he's really sold that to the fan base, which I think was huge.
I think another thing that kind of just shows how, you know, Muschamp is really adored here and like how whatever is like that season ticket promotional commercial where like his two sons are doing the Muschamp stare. I mean, they probably could, you know, they don't have much acting jobs in the Muschamp family, but
yeah.
It was just kind of, I mean, I guess it was just kind of cool to see that, you know, that Muschamp's really been embraced here and that UF's like, all right, we're going to promote Muschamp and his attitude to like sell tickets, you know. So I mean,
kind of wrapping up this topic,
yeah.
I think where Muschamp has had his biggest imprint is along the lines. And when he first took over as head coach, after his first season, he called the team soft. And he was pretty direct in saying that the offensive line and defensive lines were not where he wanted them to be, that there wasn't enough depth and there wasn't enough frontline talent. And he's done a really good job of recruiting, whether it be getting Trenton Brown types to transfer here or Tyler Moore, a transfer from St. Petersburg College, who was at Texas before, and Max Garcia, who's at Maryland.
DJ Humphreys, you know, 5-star freshman who came in and was your starting left tackle his first season. That's short up the line.
And another thing to tag on to Phil's strength along the lines thing is Florida's offensive line last year, like, you know, he got so much out of them, so much more than, you know,
yeah.
most coaches could have, you know, I mean, with that unit. You have James Wilson, you know, God love him, so many injuries, like, was an important part of that line. You know, Xavier Nixon, who, you know, I think our opinion of Xavier Nixon has been well documented on on past episodes of this podcast, got production out of him. You know, it just...
And they dominated teams like Texas A&M and
LSU.
Was unreal, that, you know, that performance at home. It was just complete domination.
And I think on the defensive side of the ball, he's really shored that up, too. You've got easily back, obviously. Damian Jacobs came in. Jaynard Boswick came in. Caleb Brantley. A lot of young guys who look like they can... Bullard, you know, Fowler, all these guys. Powell's going back. Just guys that he's brought in are really solidifying the lines. But switching, let's just go ahead and start talking about the offense. We're a good portion of the way in, and obviously offense is going to be the huge question mark here. The defense will likely, again, hold its end of the bargain, but the offense, you know, always a question mark. Let's just go ahead and get started with Matt Jones. He's going to be out for Toledo. He's expected back for Miami. What do you guys expect from him? This is a guy who's got big shoes to fill in the ones left by Mike Gillisley.
Yeah. Jones, he's a big guy. He's a big dude. If you ever see him in pads, he's like 6'2", 225 pounds.
Good size.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very different from Gillisley, who's kind of a smaller back, but really, you know, really runs, you know, north and south and, you know, carries a big punch. Jones is just huge and just bowls over everyone. But the biggest thing about Matt Jones is he can really catch the ball out of the backfield. And seeing, you know, Valdez Showers, you know, in that H-back role in Herndon, the biggest thing the coaches have said about them is their ability to, you know, be versatile and have an impact in the passing game. And that's something that Jones already does. And, I, you know, and it seems like the coaches really value that from their running backs.
Matt Jones really impressed me at the end of the Florida State game last year. Just, I mean, if Antonio Morrison knocked the Seminoles on their back, you know, Jones stepped on their throat.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean,
you should save that for a story. That was great.
You know, the 8 carries for 81 yards. I think that all came, like, in the second half.
Yeah, it was
all
late in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it was just incredible. I was, you know, maybe Florida State was worn out from, you know, the SEC, whatever, you know, but I was really impressed by that. And I hear a bunch of great things about him, obviously, from the players and the coaches. So, I mean, I don't see any reason why he shouldn't have a banner year with, especially with an improved offensive line and, you know, what should be a more threatening passing game to help balance it out.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it doesn't have to be all on him either.
Yeah,
you know?
That too.
It's just, when Gillisley had around, I think, 1,100 yards,
mm-hmm.
you know, scored some touchdowns. Maybe, you know, Matt Jones can give you, you know, 800 yards and maybe 4.2 yards per carry. And
but Mustio was talking about the 1,000-yard thing, how it's going to become a tradition here.
I mean, that'd be great. But
and
you know,
Brent Peace said that thing about how he's going to be tired after the game, remember?
Yeah, so
I think they're really going to ride him a lot. But, yeah, there are plenty of other options, as Pincus is saying, that can also carry the brunt of that load.
It'll be interesting to see, though, how they work him back in for the Miami game if he does return. I mean, it's expected, but I'm guessing that they'll probably split some snaps with him and Mac Brown, and then after the bye week, he'll probably be there. Lead back. That's my guess.
I want to see how Mac Brown does it. It feels like he's been here forever and he really hasn't had a chance. Kind of like almost like Mike Gillisley, where he never really had a chance to shine with other backs in front of him. I want to see how he does it in the first game. He's a redshirt junior. He's been here for 4 years. I think he's going to have a good game.
Yeah, Nate, I did a story on him earlier in the week for I think the Florida Times Union, and he was recruited by the likes of Alabama, Tennessee.
He was a huge recruit.
Yeah. Just hasn't really gotten his chance. You know, I don't know, maybe it's because of people playing in front of him or, you know, his performance. But, you know, it's come to, you know, Saturday, it's going to be a really big opportunity for him. And also, this could go a long way into getting him carries, you know, later in the season, because Matt Jones, in SEC, you got to have a, you know, solid backup running back.
Like you had Jones behind Gillisley last
year. Yeah,
exactly. Especially with Jones coming back from a viral infection, you got to make sure he's not. Yeah. The coach is talking about how they need to make sure he hasn't relapsed, how he stays healthy. So I could definitely a chance to see Brown getting 10 plus carries a game, even as Jones comes back.
Right, and kind of moving to the pass game a little bit. It's a unit that has kind of a lot riding on some freshmen. Solomon Patton is returning. He broke his arm against Georgia last year and missed the final half of the season. And Quentin Dunbar is the leading receiver coming back from 2012. But other than that, I mean, you have Trey Burton and a few other guys who have done a little bit. But the headline guys are Ahmad Fullwood and DeMarcus Robinson. And Joe, you sat down or had a phone conversation with Jacquez Green, a former Florida wide receiver, about DeMarcus Robinson. Can you just talk about kind of their connection and what Jacquez had to say?
Well, yeah, Jacquez Green and DeMarcus Robinson are both products out of Peach County High School in Fort Valley, Georgia. It's a 3A school, and they've had a lot of success there. Actually, I'm going to plug my cats here for a second. Rance Gillespie is the head coach of Valdosta High, where Jacquez coaches now as the wide receivers coach. Actually won a couple of state titles at Peach County. So, but anyway, enough of that segue. Jacquez saw Robinson play really at the beginning of his career in high school and said that, like, first of all, that stood out to him was his height. Like, is... like DeMarcus Robinson was 6 foot as a freshman. I think he's 6'2" now. Real potential to be a game breaker. Jacquez thinks he could potentially be an all SEC candidate down the road. Obviously, Jacquez said that that, you know, is down the road for DeMarcus. See, I'm just fumbling over my words here.
Well, we have a report coming in just now. This is kind of breaking news to the podcast, reporting that Luchez Purifoy is among three players who will be suspended for Florida's opener against Toledo, according to Gator Country and Scouts Bob Redman. A story from Alligator Army reads, each reported player's missing in their subscriber forums on Friday. Doesn't exactly say why here, but that would obviously be a huge blow to the Florida defense.
Who else is it besides Luchez? I mean, Luchez Purifoy alone is going to be a big loss. I mean, I know the secondary is pretty deep, but they're going to have some offensive stuff for him to do, too.
It looks like the other two are Darius Bear Cummings and LaTroy Pittman. Cummings is a freshman. He's a freshman, right?
He's a
transfer, right?
Transfer.
Yeah, that's right.
I believe he's a
defensive tackle.
Senior, yeah.
Yeah, and then LaTroy Pittman, who's going to be a sophomore wide receiver. By the time the podcast gets out, there'll be more on this, but that's kind of an interesting start to the season. What's been kind of a crazy fall camp.
Yeah, I mean, it is the beginning of the year, and you kind of want to you like to see Muschamp kind of get all this out of the way right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's sad to see, but I mean, Florida's going to need these guys to, you know, shape up and have a big, you know, impact this year. Especially Purifoy, he's probably their, would you say their best playmaker?
He probably is their top game changer playmaker type of play, you know, just in terms of what he can do.
I mean, in terms of week one, Toledo, I think Florida should be okay. But, I mean, Miami's going to be a really tough game. And you know, with Matt Jones out, you got Jalapio, you know, the right guard, nursing an injury. And you got, you know, a lot of off the field stuff now. I mean, it's not really what you want to think about heading into a big, you know, in-state game.
Then the thing is, we were talking about Muschamp earlier, you know, instilling his discipline on this team, like making sure he's running a good program. Like, you know, you have to think with the Gators already missing Matt Jones and John Jalapio,
Chaz Green,
and Antonio Morrison for this opener. Maybe a guy with Urban Meyer just like slap on the wrist. All right, you guys are suspended for the first half or whatever. But, you know, I mean, if this, you know, story develops into them being suspended for, you know, that first game, you know, Florida's looking at a pretty shorthanded opener against Toledo tomorrow.
Yeah, not a whole lot of depth. I think they'll be able to survive.
Yeah.
Pretty much anything against Toledo, a team out of the MAC. Obviously, Bowling Green out of the MAC last year pushed them to the wire, but I think looking at week two is where you really need some of these guys to come back.
And Miami, unranked, but that's a dang good football team. Stephen Morris probably going to be a first-round, you know, draft pick from quarterback.
I wouldn't bet against Al Golden either.
Yeah, and Duke Johnson, if you guys haven't seen this kid play, he was a freshman last season.
Mm-hmm.
He's the real deal. He could win the Heisman Trophy this year.
Yeah. It'll be one of the few times that Sun Life Stadium is actually sold out. I think they've already sold that game out. And otherwise, their home opener tonight is not even sold out, I think. So it's
going
to be a
tough
atmosphere
for them to come from the school, which is like
that's a local game. Miami versus FAU. Yeah. FAU's right up there in Boca.
Yeah,
not that FAU has a ton of fans.
And when the Hurricanes and the Owls get together, you throw the records out for that one.
Joe, how much do you think Driscoll will be able to rely on Robinson and Ahmad Foley this year?
You know, I mean, here's the thing that stood out to me is that Florida seems to have really reduced what Purevoy's going to do offensively. Like, in spring, he practiced, like, half a spring practice as a wide receiver. And then I think when we most recently talked to Pease, it said that there may be three or four plays for Purevoy game, which is still significant, but significantly reduced. So I would have to think that at least Robinson and probably Fullwood, too, have really shown a lot to the coaches in order to, you know, really step up in the offense. I mean, neither one of them is starting, but, I mean, Florida rotates so much that doesn't really matter much.
Right.
But obviously, I think you're going to see a lot of influence of Joker Phillips too, because, I mean, credit to Bush Hamden. He did a great job last year, but let's face it, he was supposed to be a graduate assistant, and then Aubrey Hill left, and they had to scramble just to get that filled out. But I really think you're going to see Joker Phillips' influence in terms of how Fullwood and Robinson do this year. And I do believe that at least Robinson will give Driscoll a good option in the passing game this season.
Getting Joker Phillips to come coach your wide receivers at Florida, that's an absolute coup.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sure, Kentucky didn't have a whole lot of success when he was their head coach, but you're telling me that guy couldn't have gotten an offensive coordinator job somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think he could have. The fact that he agreed to come coach receivers at Florida and work with Brent Pease, I think they're just miles ahead in terms of coaching from when they were last year.
Got a couple of Kentucky guys working on the offense.
Yeah. We'll see how that works. Steve, you have something to add?
Yeah, I was going to say, Robinson looked really good in the open practices. There was a couple times where he just blew past Marcus Roberson. One that I remember was during the open practice at a lacrosse field, where he just had him beat by a step and made a great one-handed catch that drew a ton of cheers from the crowd. I'm sure as a freshman he's had a little bit of trouble. Some other things I remember, I think it was after one of the practices at the Swamp, where I think Joker Phillips had him rolling around on the field for something he did in practice. But he's going to be a great addition to the offense.
Wait, is something to add? Looked like you're...
No, I'm good.
Marcus Robinson has proved that Georgia high school football is superior to all other forms of football.
No bias there from Joe.
Yeah, basically just affirming what you guys are saying. Both guys come out pretty good. Rivals, top 100, pretty highly touted. I mean, Florida's had some pretty highly touted wide receiver recruits, but these two have made more of an impression in fall camp than we've seen in a while from any freshman receiver. So it should be very interesting to see what type of role they have.
Plus, if you're going to follow any two Florida players on Twitter, it should be Ahmad Fullwood and Nick Washington, because the banter they have is pretty good.
It is pretty good. Yeah, I think just wrapping up the true freshman receiver thoughts is, three of the last 5 years, the Gators haven't had a true freshman receiver make a catch. Last year, LaTroy Pittman had two catches for 5 or 6 yards to lead the unit. In 2010, they had a freshman, the name escapes me right now, it's 7 for 69.
Robert Clark.
Yeah,
he's no longer on the team. Yeah.
He's now at Louisville. So yeah, there's just not a whole lot of, you know, precedent for guys coming in and making a difference since probably Percy Harvin in, you know, the mid-2000s. So it'll be interesting to see what those guys can do. Do any of you have any kind of storylines from the offense that we haven't touched on?
Well, just in the same note about freshman receivers, I was kind of excited to see what Alvin Bailey would do, but Brent Pease, Will Muschamp, haven't really talked about him. Looks like he might pick up a red shirt.
I guess you could, the backup quarterback situation. Driscoll just cannot get hurt at all.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, right now you have Jeff Driscoll, obviously, as a starting quarterback. Behind him, you have Tyler Murphy and Skylar Morningwig, two guys who have combined to throw exactly zero passes in a collegiate game. To me, it's kind of perplexing that Tyler Murphy would even stick around for this long. I mean, the guy's never gotten a chance. It seems like he could have gone to maybe a smaller Division I or Division II school and played somewhere else, but he seems to like UF, but he just doesn't get any chance to see the field.
He likes throwing passes to Pat Young.
I did see that video the other day. It was great.
Pat Young,
he looks amazing at tight end. But, the one thing to piggyback on that is, a big topic this offseason has been Jeff Driscoll running and how often is he going to run and, keeping himself out of harm's way. And if Matt Jones can, provide the Gators with a consistent running attack, kind of like Gillislee, then, Driscoll can focus more on, passing the football. Mm-hmm. But if Florida can't get a consistent running attack like they need, like they had last year, Driscoll's going to have to win games with his feet. And, in the SEC, that's kind of a scary thought, really.
I think if you look back at some of the games he played in 2011, his freshman year, when he came in for John Brantley, it just seemed like he was thinking, he was still in high school, he could just run. That was his first thought. If his first three wasn't open, he was just going to take off. And it didn't work, and he got hurt. I think he got better last year. He obviously wasn't perfect. I think he's going to improve again this year and have a better... If he'll run when he has to, and that's a big weapon of his, something he can really exploit when he has to.
I think he broke the school record against Vanderbilt for quarterback. Yeah, it was a great game.
Yeah.
But it's just something to keep in mind. If Florida can't generate, consistent, carries and production from, the running backs, how much is Driscoll going to have to carry the load with his feet?
Mm, exactly right.
And to add to our prior breaking news report, Gator Country is also reporting that two more players will be suspended for the first game. Quintezy Williams and Jaynard Bostwick. So it should be interesting if this is
Williams.
What?
Quintez Williams.
Quintezy.
I've heard people say Quintezy, so I've kind of ran with that.
I think it's
Quintez. Quintez, okay. Yeah, so Quintez Williams and Jaynard Bostwick.
That's a lot of depth they're losing, but I don't think, other than Pierre Foy, they're losing any big-time playmakers. But, I mean, that's obviously something to keep tabs on.
Wait, who's the other guy besides Quintez?
Jaynard Bostwick. This is all reportedly, so.
All according to Gator Country, is also reported earlier this week, that...
What came out of that, by the way? Oh, go ahead and say it for the listeners.
That three members of the Gators basketball team are going to be suspended. Casey Prather and...
Dorian Finney-Smith and DeMontre Harris. So yeah. We'll keep tabs on that. I haven't heard anything definitive yet, but we will keep updated on that. We don't want to put anything in print that's not true, so we'll
It'll be interesting.
Taking out the entire Gators front court there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how both of those stories develop going in. I would like to kind of get to a new game that we're introducing here on the Alligator Sports Podcast called Yay or Nay. And in this game, I'll... All right. I will read each of you one at a time a statement. You guys, one of you each tells me yay or nay, whether you think it's true or false that that happened and why. So I guess we'll start with Joe.
Wait, I want to say something. I like
okay.
this. Was that your idea?
This is my idea.
We need some, intro music for this, don't you think?
Yeah, well, Landon's our producer. He can add that in.
I could add it in. I don't know. What were you thinking?
All right, let's get started.
Nothing copyrighted, obviously. But.
If any listeners have any good ideas on some music, you guys can...
If anybody's still listening.
Yeah, at this point, that would be a miracle. But if you have any ideas, pheilman@alligator.org. Anyways, yay or nay, Joe, DeMarcus Robinson catches 5 touchdowns this season.
Yay.
Explain.
Well, I think he's talented.
Talent doesn't exactly translate to 5 touchdowns every... That's a pretty big number for a freshman.
Yeah, I know. I do think that he's really going to play a bigger role in the vertical passing game, and I imagine that Florida can at least bring 2 or 3 of those this season, and then I'm sure that Robinson will come into play in other situations as well. Basically, what I expect out of DeMarcus Robinson is that he will be productive enough where five touchdowns is a very real possibility. So I'll say yay.
Does any one person have a counter-argument to that or disagree? No, all right. I guess we're all in on the DeMarcus Robinson bandwagon. All right, Steve, yay or nay? Jeff Driskel throws 15 or more touchdown passes this year. Last year he had 12.
I'm going to say yay. I think he's going to be an improved passer this year. He's got, like we said about DeMarcus Robinson, Ahmad Fullwood, Quentin Dunbar back for another year. He has more weapons to throw to. I don't think 15's too out of reach. I think he could get 20.
Kind of a corollary to that, yay or nay, the tight end unit catches 5 of those touchdowns.
Ooh.
Nay.
I'm going to go with nay on that one. I haven't seen enough out of Clay Burton or Tevin Westbrook receiving to say that they're going to do that.
I have a good one.
Okay, go ahead.
Who will catch more passes, the converted tight ends or the true tight ends?
That's tough. I think I'd go with the converted tight ends. Even though they're lower on the depth chart, I think Burton and Tevin Westbrook will be used more for blocking.
Yeah.
Moving on. Landon, your turn. Yes. Yay or nay, Ronald Powell plays at least 10 games this year.
I'm going to have to go with yay on that. I think he's going to stay healthy and avoid any type of injury. I mean, he's looked pretty good during preseason. Obviously, this is just taking a wild guess, but my gut's telling me that he'll be healthy. Yeah.
I would say, for me, I think I would probably lean toward over on 10 games, but you just never know with twice-repaired ACLs if they're going to hold up. And also, you see guys that come back from ACL injuries often develop injuries in other spots, whether it be calves or hamstrings or something. That's kind of something to look out for because, like I said earlier, and like we all kind of mentioned, this guy's a beast when he's on the field, and it'll be really interesting if Florida can keep him healthy. And hopefully for the Gators, it's yay on 10 games.
I'll say 8 or 9, just to make it fun.
All right, so Joe takes the under on that. Pincus, yay or nay, the Gators' defense is a top 10 unit in the country at the end of the season. Last year they finished number 5.
Yay.
Yay.
It's like 3 thumbs up.
3 thumbs up. Okay, why is that?
You're not worried, Joe.
The
Joe
Gators
just
are
gave me a high five.
Joe just gave Pincus a high five. The Gators lost 7 starters. Can you count them from last year's unit?
Can I count them? All right. Elam, it's safety.
1.
And then Evans.
2.
And then you got Bostic.
3.
And Jelani Jenkins.
4.
And then you have Omar Hunter.
5.
And Sharif Floyd.
6.
And Laurenti McRae.
7. All right.
Yeah.
So
boom. I did my research.
Those 7 losses, you don't think are enough to bump them?
No, because you got to look who they're replacing. I mean, the one that I'm really worried about is the secondary and Elam and Evans. That's a big loss. I mean, you have 2 unproven players back there in Cody Riggs and who's been predominantly a cornerback in his time at UF, and Marcus May, who's a redshirt freshman. That's the one that I'm looking at the most. But then you have, you know, McCray you replace with somebody like, you know, Dante Fowler. Then you also got Ronald Powell coming in, and, you know, Omar Hunter and Sharif Floyd are getting replaced by, you know, Easley and Damian Jacobs. So, I mean, they got talent coming back.
That's another big comeback that like hasn't been talked about that much. Cody Riggs only played 2 games last year. He was out since Texas A&M.
He's always been a solid player at UF.
Yeah, and now he's moving to a new position. He's playing safety now, so I think it's really interesting to see how that plays out.
But I'm going to have to go with nay with that. I think that the Gators will still be a very good defense, but I think they'll be in that 11 to 20 range. I feel like those 7 starters, a lot of them last year, the year before that, had a year under their belt. There's a lot of newcomers on this defense that they played last year, but they didn't start every game. Maybe didn't see as many snaps. So I think that there'll be a little less experience on the defense, obviously, and I think there'll be a little bit.
And one newcomer that we haven't talked about is the new defensive coordinator, DJ Durkin. Dan Quinn left to take the Seattle Seahawks defensive coordinator job during the offseason, and Durkin, who was the special teams coordinator, was promoted to the defensive coordinator. Do you guys think that changes anything, or do you think this is much of a system?
No, I don't think it changes anything. I was talking to a bunch of defensive players at Media Day at the start of camp, and I asked probably each and every single one of them, what's the difference between Durkin's defense and Dan Quinn's defense, and they said, there's no change. It's exactly the same.
Yeah, and Durkin's been around the program for a while now. So
Durkin's awesome.
Yeah, I fully expect the Gators to not even miss a beat, you know, with Dan Quinn and those starters gone.
Cool. All right, I think we've got about 10 minutes left in the podcast. We'll do one more round of yay or nay. Joe, yay or nay, will Antonio Morrison miss 1 more half of a game this season, not counting week 1, a full half, whether it be due to injury or suspension?
I'm rooting for him, so I'll say nay.
Does anybody have any disagreements?
I'm gonna. I'll take yay because you never know what can happen. He could.
Gator.
He could pull his hamstring or something. Who knows? He might miss a game.
Are you just insinuating that he may get suspended again? Is
that... Well, I'm not saying. I think that there's a good chance that he gets suspended again, but not for off the field issues.
Yeah.
Something that we haven't talked about yet is the new targeting rule that's in place this year in college football, where in the past, if a player was deemed to have targeted another player with a head-to-head hit or a forearm to the head, shoulder to the head, it was a 15-yard penalty. But in addition to that, this year, players will immediately be ejected from the game. And if it happens in the second half, the player also has to sit out the first half of the ensuing game.
Which is weird to me, because why would the second half matter more than the first half in terms of player safety?
I think it's just if someone has the flag with 2 minutes left in the game, they still have to sit out the next half just to kind of think. So it's not all hell breaking loose at that last
yeah,
five
but what
minutes
if it's
the
like the kickoff of the... What
yeah,
like
I mean, I don't know. I think that's just kind of the sweeping rules. But I think that's going to be something that comes into play this season.
I think somebody got ejected last
maybe they should suspend you
yeah,
for the next
I think
4 quarters
yeah.
after you. Maybe they should
yeah.
suspend you for the next 4 quarters.
Maybe, or a certain time length. But I think that's the rules now that's how they're going to play. And not to say that Morrison, above anybody else, is at risk for a suspension because of that, but this is a guy who...
He's known for his big hits.
Yeah, known for his big hits. He just cleaned E.J. Manuel's clock last year. And this is a guy that's had a pretty rough offseason. He's obviously going to have a lot of aggression built up by the time he gets to play. And he's obviously shown questionable decision-making in the past. I could easily see him kind of losing focus for a play and ending up suspended. That's kind of my only thing on the yay.
So
we'll
what's
see.
What's the next one?
The next one.
We will agree to disagree.
All right, sir. Yay or nay? Steve, Matt Jones finishes with more than 800 rushing yards this season.
I'm going to say nay. I think he's going to have a good year. I think his time is going to be limited. He's missing the first game already. I think Muschamp said he was questionable for Miami, but I think we're all assuming he's going to be playing. I think they're going to limit his time a little bit, just make sure he's healthy. Like I've said, for every player you get this possibility, he misses time with an injury. And he may not be up to his standards. He's only a sophomore. I think he'll have a good year. If I had to pick a number, I would say 700, 750. 800 might be a little high.
Kind of a corollary to that. Who ends up with the second most rushing yards besides Matt Jones, not counting Jeff Driscoll? Which running back do you think ends up number two in rush yards this season?
I'm going to go with Mark Herndon, and I have no reasoning behind that pick. It's just my God, he's number three on the depth chart. Going with Mark Herndon.
Hashtag analysis.
Yeah.
All right, Landon.
I'll say Valdez Showers.
Okay, Landon, over under 12 combined sacks from John Bullard and Dante Fowler this year.
I'm going to have to go over.
Over?
I think that they'll exceed. Both those guys are pretty good. They proved themselves last year, and I think they're both going to have a breakout season.
Dominic Eason led the team last year with 4 sacks. He's saying both of those guys could get more than 6 on average.
I think one of them will have 6, and one of them will have maybe 7 or 8. So it's going to slightly go over your bet.
Which
your
one
bet,
do you believe in more at this point?
Fowler. I think Fowler will have a big year.
Fowler just blew by everyone during the drills and open practice. You could just see his physicality didn't get past everybody. I think DJ Humphrey, whoever they had him up against, Trenton Brown, who probably has 100 pounds and 6 or 7 inches on Dante Fowler. He just went around him.
All right, last one, Pincus. Yay or nay? The Florida Gators will be playing in Atlanta this season.
I think we're going to go with yay on that one.
So you think that the Gators will win the SEC East?
I do, and I think they'll finally beat Georgia. I think last year what kind of did them in against Georgia was the passing attack just really wasn't where it needed to be. They just couldn't get that big play
mm-hmm.
at the end of the game when they really needed it.
Right.
And I have a lot of confidence in Jeff Driscoll this year. He's got to make that step, and usually you see the biggest step in football from year one to year two.
Landon, yay or nay? Gators make it to Atlanta.
I'm going to have to go with nay. I think Georgia has way more weapons than Florida offensively. I mean, Georgia did have a drop-off defensively, but I feel like their offense is absolutely superior. And then South Carolina looked pretty good yesterday, too, so you can't discredit them. So I don't think so.
Can
nay?
I have a condition?
No.
No?
Oh,
well,
let's hear him.
What's your condition?
Okay, if they beat Georgia, they're going to Atlanta.
Okay.
No, that's the one thing.
Win all their games are going to Atlanta.
Yeah. That's not what I'm saying.
If I take I-75,
whatever.
I'll get to Atlanta too.
Whatever. Okay. If they beat Georgia, I think they're going to go to Atlanta, and I think they have a chance to play for the national championship. If they don't beat Georgia, even if I just think if they can't beat Georgia and can't get over that hump, then something else will have gone wrong along the way, and they're just not going to. They'll lose a couple games in the SEC and fall up short.
Or nay, the Gators make it to Atlanta.
I said in July that they were a year away, and I stand by that now. The Georgia Bulldogs, I believe, will win the SEC this year.
Yeah, I totally agree with Joe. After a year of all these new incomers having starting roles, I think that next year they will be at Atlanta bound, but not this year.
Well, I just said, partly why I said yay was because I'd love to go to Atlanta.
Yeah,
I'd
love to
go to Atlanta. It's a great city.
I think I tend to agree with Joe and Landon, and that I think the Gators might be about a year away. But to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if Pincus was right. I think that there's not much separating Florida, Georgia, or South Carolina at this point. It's going to be who can stay healthy, who can get consistent quarterback play, and who really just gets the lucky breaks. Florida could have won that game against Georgia last year.
They were a Jordan Reed fumble away from probably winning that game.
Right, so I mean, you never know what could happen, but I think they're probably a year away. All right, well, I think that pretty much wraps up our season preview podcast. If you are still listening, kudos to you, and that's pretty much amazing. We'll be looking to be a little bit more consistent this year with a podcast, trying to do two or three a week, incorporate some smaller sports while also talking some football, men's basketball, and everything else that's going on, maybe even some pop culture from Joe Morgan, the screenwriter. So, thank you for listening, and see you next time.